From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the U.S. attorney who convicted both of the leaders of the legislature comes to Albany to speak to a conference of the state's mayors. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on his conversation with Preet Bharara this week. And the Hudson Valley congressman calls on Amazon to ban the sale of gun-shaped phone cases. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. U.S. attorney who convicted both of the leaders of the legislature came to Albany this week to speak to a conference of the state's mayors. But Preet Bharara was not invited to the state capitol itself, and he did not meet directly with any lawmakers, even though Bharara and Governor Cuomo attended the same event, the swearing-in of the state's new chief judge. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
U.S. attorney Preet Bharara.
The U.S. attorney addressed mayors from all over the state gathered for their annual meeting, where he told them the point of his anti-corruption work is to protect democracy.
The point is not just to punish a politician who has broken the law, although that is necessary too, but to help improve a political system that has broken down.
And he told the mayors their job is made all the harder because of the culture of corruption in state government. Bharara told the local government leaders that they have a right not to be ripped off when they ask state government for help.
You just want your state legislators to be on the level. That should not be too much to ask.
Bharara did not mention the two convicted legislative leaders by name during his speech, though he referred to their recent convictions on multiple felony charges. The U.S. attorney has been publicly critical of Albany's system of deal-making on the budget and other top issues, the so-called three men in a room, where the governor and legislative leaders meet privately to settle issues. Bharara also did not mention Governor Andrew Cuomo, the last of the three men in the room left standing since the convictions of former leaders Silver and Skelos. Although the U.S. attorney recently issued a statement saying he had not found any evidence of criminality in a probe related to Cuomo's office.
The judges of the Court of Appeals and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of New York.
Bharara did appear in the ornate Court of Appeals chambers later in the day. Cuomo was also there to witness the swearing-in of the governor's pick for the new chief judge, Janet DeFiore. The U.S. attorney and governor sat in different places and did not speak to one another. Afterward, Cuomo said that he and Bharara are on the same page when it comes to rooting out corruption. The governor says he's already laid out in his State of the State message a proposal to strictly limit the outside income of legislators.
You don't really get to this issue until you resolve the fundamental conflict. And the fundamental conflict is legislators are allowed to make outside income.
The governor has been unsuccessful in the past getting major reform measures passed in the legislature, and Senate Republicans have said they are against limiting outside income. Cuomo says it's up to the public to persuade the legislature to do the right thing.
It comes down to the people of the state of New York, who have to say enough is enough.
Earlier in the day, Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan spoke to the mayor's group before the U.S. attorney appeared. Afterward, the Senate leader, citing a busy schedule, seemed eager to leave. He talked to reporters as he rapidly walked out of the hotel. He was asked his thoughts about Bharara addressing the mayors.
I think it's fine. He's obviously a guest of NICOM. He's making a lot of speeches all over the place, so this should be no different.
As for more prosecutions in the future, the U.S. attorney says we're not closing up shop anytime soon. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Meanwhile, U.S. attorney Preet Bharara and Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok spent an hour live on the air with the U.S. attorney at WAMC's Performing Arts Studio. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
U.S. Attorney for New York's Southern District, Preet Bharara, has described Albany as a cauldron of corruption. He visited the capital city to address a meeting of the State Conference of Mayors, then made a stop at the Linda Monday afternoon, where he addressed a gathering of citizens and good government groups before sitting down for a live radio conversation with WAMC's Alan Shartok.
I'm here because I have hope that change is possible. I'm here because there are so many good people in the legislature and elsewhere. And I want to congratulate and commend those in government who genuinely embrace reform, advocate change, and welcome scrutiny.
Bharara, who worked 4.5 years as a legislative staffer in the U.S. Senate on the Judiciary Committee, said corruption can be stopped.
In recent times, the New York legislature has been marked by regular bribery, rampant kickbacks, and a rancid culture. Recent events paint a portrait of the show-me-the-money culture in the worst possible way. It continues, by the way, to be a bipartisan affair, Republican and Democrat, in the Assembly and in the Senate, upstate and downstate.
Last year, Bharara's office successfully prosecuted Democratic ex-Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and Republican ex-Senate leader Dean Skelos on corruption charges. Both leaders had denied the accusations.
If you attended the trials or reviewed any of the evidence, and I spent a lot of time at both trials, you would have seen how much of an overwhelming sense of entitlement pervaded both leaders' thinking and conduct, entitlement to money, entitlement to power. In fact, the defense in the Sheldon Silver case was basically that this was just business as usual in Albany.
Bharara was incredulous that as corruption played on, no one came forward.
There was a deafening silence of the individuals who, over the time period covered by our investigations, must have seen something, must have known something, but said nothing. Those who learned of suspicious and potentially criminal activity in the halls of the Capitol, yet said nothing. No one made a call. No one blew the whistle. No one sounded the alarm. That's part of the problem that I've been speaking about, the utter failure to self-police in the Capitol.
Albany Democratic Assemblyman John McDonald, the only local member of the legislature in the audience, says, contrary to what Bharara told the crowd, the handwriting wasn't clearly on the wall, at least not for him.
I found that to be surprising and embarrassing because it really painted a picture over the whole body that we were enablers to that, and we weren't.
McDonald says he did find certain rewarding and redeeming elements in Bharara's chat.
As he said, like many of us are, we're all New Yorkers. We want the best for our state. We want the best government. That's where I think government has fallen short over the last 2 or 3 decades. I do think members now are much more educated and attentive to not being sidetracked, but the reality is I couldn't guarantee you today that somebody's not doing something inappropriate.
The Bharara visit was co-sponsored by WAMC, the New York Public Interest Research Group, the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, and Citizens Union. Barbara Bartoletti, legislative director of the New York State League of Women Voters, makes a case for eliminating temptation and ensuing corruption via reform.
Not just campaign finance reform, but you have to do ethics reform along with it and close some of these pay-to-play culture that has gone on for so many years here. And everybody plays that same game. And they run for election every 2 years. So they constantly have to be raising money. If you lower the campaign contribution, public financing would be a very good way to go about that. Nobody, the governor puts it in his budget, the legislature takes it out of his budget, and nobody talks about it after that. So we really have to have the political will to get all of this done.
Bharara's office also investigated Governor Andrew Cuomo's abrupt shutdown of the Moreland Commission, but found insufficient evidence of a crime.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, we just heard our Karen DeWitt talking about the U.S. Attorney, Preet Bharara, who, of course, convicted both leaders of the legislature in Albany Monday to speak to the Conference of States Mayors. Not invited to the state capitol, he did not meet directly with state lawmakers, even though Bharara and Governor Cuomo attended the same event, the swearing-in of the state's new judge. However, he did make his way over to WAMC's Linda Norris Auditorium for a live conversation with you. And what a conversation it was, a wide-ranging discussion, also filled with humor.
That was what was unexpected. He's a funny guy. You know, in the old days when I used to host a program with Mario Cuomo, me and Mario, I could always expect that he would give me a tough time. Cuomo would. And people loved it. It was just showed how bright he was. Well, in comes Bharara, and I made a comment, and I said, you know, this is what I think, but I'm sure you don't care what I think. And he said, I always care what you think, Alan. And all of a sudden, I was transported back to the old Cuomo days of sardonic comment and very funny. This is a funny man, but a tough man. You know, I said to him, so what is it that would be a disincentive, basically, to people to commit crimes? And he said, basically, the prospect of a jail term.
His humor came in the form of referencing Bruce Springsteen, who was in town the same night on Monday to give a concert. When asked about his future ambitions by you, well, he said he wasn't born to run.
Yep, he took the boss's words and the name of his song, and he teased us all. Look, David, if somebody's going to run for public office, they never tell you they're going to run until they run. Somebody wants to be vice president. It would not be right to say, I want to be vice president, because, you know, if the guy doesn't pick you or the woman doesn't pick you, you're out of luck. So it is de rigueur to be in denial about any of this. But there are an awful lot of people who would love to see Preet Bharara run for governor.
As part of that is his background story, which he shared a bit with you during the interview.
That's right. You know, he has Indian parents, but they come by way of all directions. One of his wife's grandparents is Jewish. And so basically they celebrate in his family. I read in a paper Ramadan and Yom Kippur and so many of the other holidays. He's a very interesting man.
From the New York State Politics blog, Alan, with the results of New Hampshire still sinking in, former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg's top political advisor Kevin Sheekey tweeted a New York Post story making the case for the Bloomberg candidacy.
Well, look, Bloomberg is one of the richest men in the world. He's a man I much admire. He wants to be president, but there's no opening. He has said that if Bernie Sanders runs for president and becomes the nominee, he would probably do it. But if he does it, as I've said so many times, there would be resultant chaos. Assuming Bloomberg does well and takes votes from both sides, that throws it into the House of Representatives, and you know what happens then. The Republicans win.
New York Governor Cuomo, of course, wants the state to lead by example when it comes to raising the minimum wage. He's showing a report now that says there's going to be a positive impact, in fact, creating jobs. Businesses predictably don't agree.
Well, look, David, we know that in this time in the world, the economies of the world are really hurting. And I don't think it's any different here in the United States. The stock market has taken some major hits. So when you analyze what these incentives have meant in terms of business, I have a sense that, you know, you're going to find out not as much as had been hoped. The governor has been very quiet. We can only say that one and one makes two. Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, looked hard at the governor for violation as the third man in the famous room, two of whom were on their way to jail. The U.S. attorney was looking at the governor for the ending of the Moreland Act Commission, for the Buffalo Billions out in Buffalo. All of a sudden, we are seeing a different Andrew Cuomo, a kinder, nicer Andrew than we had seen for a long time. Do you think one has anything to do with the other? I do.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. With national calls to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo wants the state to lead by example. He's imposing the wage raise in some sectors and pushing for the increase in others. Mountain Lake Public Television held a panel discussion recently on the pros and cons of increasing the minimum wage, and the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
Mountain Lake Journal's panel on New York's plans to increase the minimum wage included employers, advocates, and economists who weighed in on the repercussions of raising the wage to $15 per hour. The wage board has mandated that state employees and fast food workers will see their wages rise to $15 an hour by mid-2021. The State University of New York followed suit, announcing that hourly workers across the system would also see a minimum wage increase. During his State of the State address, Cuomo lobbied the state legislature to make $15 the minimum for all workers in the state.
My proposal to go to $15 is reasonable. It is phased in to allow the economy to grow and to adjust.
Panelists at the Mountain Lake Forum noted that the only business sector represented before the wage board in discussions over the $15 minimum wage were fast food workers. Other business sectors were not at the table. M&W Foods and White Management owns 22 quick-serve and 4 full-serve restaurants in northern New York, Albany, and Massachusetts. Director of Human Resources Jeff White calls the process to set the minimum wage in New York unfair.
They should have had all the parties at the table so that all the concerns and possible ramifications could have been talked about. And it wasn't done in this case.
Nine Platte Hospitality Group operates the Best Western Plus Inn at Smithfield and the Ground Round Restaurant in Plattsburgh. President Bob Smith believes the minimum wage issue is a political platform, noting how the wage board targeted one small sector of the hospitality industry.
It was politically low-hanging fruit. It was popular to take that position, and the next jump in minimum wage is a much more significant one for us. And if they do away with the tip credit, that's going to be a huge, huge problem.
Joint Council for Economic Opportunity CEO Bruce Garcia noted that the wage increase would also have severe repercussions in the not-for-profit sector.
We're talking about increasing the minimum wage over the course of the next 6 years by about 67%, when what the normal progression would be about 19.5%. Most agencies and most businesses can't keep pace with that kind of an increase. I'm all in favor of people making a living wage. I see way too many people that live in poverty, and I know the devastating impact of living in poverty. I obviously want to see us get there. I'd just like to see the time frame change.
SUNY Plattsburgh economist Colin Reed offered that the minimum wage is being used as a panacea to solve poverty issues.
We have the earned income tax credit that is probably underutilized. And another nuance I think we need to look at is $15 isn't $15. It has to have a cost of living that truly reflects the poverty level of different regions rather than this kind of simplistic one-size-fits-all kind of model.
A lawsuit has been filed against the wage board by the National Restaurant Association, and an expedited hearing is expected to be heard in April.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A Hudson Valley congressman has called on Amazon to ban the sale of gun-shaped phone cases. Though officials say the online giant already has such a ban in place, one of its third-party retailers was able to slip through the cracks. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Democratic Congressman Elliot Engel last week called for the retail giant to stop the sale of cell phone cases that are made to look like guns. Although Amazon itself does not sell them, Engel found that a third-party retailer was able to list this type of case on Amazon's online marketplace.
These cases that you wrap around your cell phone that look like guns are dangerous and should be banned. I mean, it's just obvious. It's plain common sense that a policeman could interpret that, could look at that and think it was a gun and somebody could get injured.
Engel says Amazon officials phoned him February 8th to explain they do prohibit sale of the cases, but the third-party seller violated that policy. Therefore, Amazon would take down that listing immediately. Repeated requests for comment from Amazon were not returned. Engel says he was glad to hear from Amazon about its action.
You know, I have a bill that would do that, but if we can stop it without the bill, that's even better, because my objective is to stop a tragedy before it occurs.
In July, U.S. Senator Charles Schumer urged online retailers, including Amazon and eBay, to immediately stop selling iPhone cases made to look like a real gun. Schumer had cited warnings by the New York Police Department about the dangers of the iPhone gun grip case, which was advertised to complement a person's front or back pocket, brandished as if it were a real weapon. Both Amazon and eBay halted sales. Also in July, after consulting with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives and the Department of Commerce, Engel, a senior member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, introduced the Gun Lookalike Case Act, which would add phone cases shaped like guns to the statutory definition of gun lookalikes while giving the Consumer Product Safety Commission jurisdiction over these and similar products.
Well, really, I think what Congress should be looking at is the Consumer Product Safety Commission should be regulating not only gun-shaped cell phone cases, which, by the way, don't kill anybody, but the actual gun.
Leah Gunn Barrett is executive director of New Yorkers Against Gun Violence.
On one level, would we support this bill? Yeah, but, you know, what I would much rather get behind is Congress requiring that guns are regulated for consumer health and safety.
Engel's bill says any toy or look-alike firearm shall have a blaze orange plug inserted in the barrel. Engel's bill has two Democratic sponsors, including New York Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney. For WAMC News, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1607 or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.